Welcome to another edition of the Big Pod Machine.
The greatest Reds podcast in the world.
Absolutely.
That we know of.
No, it is. It is.
Known and unknown?
It doesn't matter what else is out there. We know what we got right here. And this is a big week. This is a huge week. This is Pat Brennan, my partner. I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer, and we're with the greatest producer of any podcast in the world, Phil Didion, who, by the way, is dressed for the big week. You gotta see what Phil is wearing. Anybody watching on YouTube, check this out. This is the spirit of the podcast. We got a Durham Bulls jersey.
Crash Davis.
It doesn't get better than that, except for the hat. Check out the hat. Phil, what is this? What is this again? Here, speak.
Yeah. It's from the Ted Karras Foundation, Sitsy Fit. It was a limited edition baseball hat.
Very cool. And by the way, that foundation does a lot of good work. And if you look it up online,
yeah.
Buy a hat. Help out that foundation.
Ted Karras does a lot of really great work in that area. So shout out Ted.
Absolutely.
We'll all be going to see practice in a little while. On the fields over yonder.
Better things to do than practice going.
I know. We're talking about the game.
The game. We're not talking about practice.
Not practice.
This is the game.
Not the game that I die for.
And by the way, these are big games. We've got Philly in town. Got Milwaukee in town. Nobody's playing better baseball than Milwaukee.
Scary.
I mean, Seattle wants to say it is, but nobody's playing better baseball than Milwaukee. The team that the place where they stole my original Seattle team, by the way. Friggin' Bud Selig. I'm never going to get over that. They took my Sonics, too, and moved them down the river to friggin' Oklahoma. It ain't going to be the same. Williams, Jack Sigma.
You should be allowed to re-inherit the history of the team that played in Seattle.
No, that's bogus. That's BS. That's the crap they do in Cleveland. That team's in Baltimore. Tell that to the fans up there. Yeah, they get the same colors, which is like no logo, no colors. But it's not.
This is becoming an NFL podcast. Look, now they're stretching. Do you want to talk Bengals?
No. We got a lot of Hunter Green.
Yeah, we do.
Hey, we got some Kyle Schwarber. You want to start with Kyle Schwarber?
Yeah, let's talk about it. So Kyle Schwarber put the final nail in the Reds' coffin in the Monday series.
You got him buried?
No.
You got yourself going in the river already?
No, I'm talking about the game. It's just game.
Yeah.
The game.
Yeah. The game. Opener of that series.
Yeah, Kyle Schwarber had a 5-10% controversial home run that was ended up being a crew chief review.
Oh, you know what? You know where that press box is. Our press box is in left field,
yeah.
And it looked like a home run to us.
Yeah.
So I think
it looked like a home run on TV,
it was
frankly.
A formality to
yeah, but anyway,
at that point.
Mammoth Kyle Schwarber, 2-run shot to make it 4-1 in the 8th inning on a night when Andrew Abbott Totally shoved. I love that word.
As Gavin Lux put it,
and you can extrapolate from context clues to understand where they're going.
They used to refer to that with a
phrase
back in the day, and it's just been shortened to shoved.
Shoved,
now.
Yeah. But he shoved, and
scoreless baseball. I mean, he was shutting down one of the best lineups.
He
no hit
them
the league
for four innings.
It was classic and all-star and version of Andrew Abbott.
And I thought it was a great bounce back for him against the Phillies. I think he faced them on July 4th.
Yeah, I don't think he got out of the fourth.
No, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but he really had to grind, and it ultimately was not one of his better days. I think it might have been his first loss of the year.
First, it might have been the first.
At that point. Anyway, you got what you needed out of Andrew Abbott, but Kyle Schwarber did what he did to get back on track here.
You want to know something? So they got four straight hits after he had a shutout
with,
going.
With two outs.
It was 1-0, Reds, 8th inning. Got the first two outs with a 94-mile-an-hour strike three, a 95-mile-an-hour strike three. You don't see very many 95s at Andrew Abbott.
Yeah.
So his velocity was still there. He was still locating. And our buddy .com And if anybody knows Mark Sheldon,
shoutout.com,
Mark Sheldon of MLB.com, who sits next to the inquirer's spot in the press box,
yeah,
leaned over and said, "Do you let him finish the game?" He's at I think he was at close, right around 90 pitches at that point, low 90s. "Do you let him finish?" I said, "Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I let him face one or two guys or let him get through the first lefty." I said, "You got the bottom of the order coming up, so maybe you let him do that." And then boom, the bottom
of the order.
And then he gives up another hit to Trey Turner, and then there's an error on the play. And then all of a sudden, no, that's it.
Yeah.
And go to the
game was gone. But the game's gone because of Kyle Schwarber, who...
He should be a Red next year. He should be a Red next year.
And that's what we're going to talk about here.
Yeah.
There are a lot of puzzle pieces that you could fit into the Reds' most glaring needs right now. Kyle Schwarber just feels like the perfect puzzle piece.
There might not be another player out there who would do more to impact and elevate what they already have and what they'll still have going into next year than that man. And then when you narrow the pool to who's going to be available, assuming that he hits free agency as scheduled,
which he will,
which it looks very much like he will, then there's just simply not a better fit. And if you were ever going to go out and spend some money on a free agent in this post-Joey Votto era, this is the time to do it.
Yeah. I mean, and part of that is because you have... I mean, it just lines up so perfectly. You're going to get Tito in year two of his initial three-year deal.
Look what he's done in 4+ months of baseball with this roster.
I mean,
as it's evolved,
he's made them a contender as we move into mid-August, and we can debate the extent to which they're a contender and what we think we'll do down the track.
I'm talking about what he's done with his influence on the roster.
Oh, sure,
and helping, like, he was part of the trade deadline, and part
of things before that as well.
Well, absolutely, but they didn't have a lot of resources. They worked incrementally around the edges, and they made themselves better in about three areas, you know, incrementally, but
it's paid off quite a bit.
It's already paid off. And if this team gets on a heater, or, you know, God forbid it makes the playoffs.
Yeah.
You can do more things now.
Yeah. You've already heard me say that. I think that, regardless of whether they make the playoffs or not, this is a good first step in year one for Terry Francona and this whole roster. Yeah. I think if things continue on this trend line, they may fall a little bit short of a wild card spot, but it's a good step toward contending next year and being a viable contender out of the gate.
And it's not, and if they fall short, it's not going to be for lack of getting better as the season went on. It might be because they've got the toughest remaining schedule in the majors on paper. And this includes, of their last 43 games, starting with this Philly series, 7 of their opponents, 25 games, are against teams in playoff position, including the AL East leading Blue Jays, the NL East leading Phillies, the NL West leading Dodgers.
Well, you've got the West Coast swing.
The Padres on the road.
Just going out to the West Coast is a chore in itself.
And there's two of those coming up. They've got the Cubs for 4 coming up. They got the Brewers in 2 series.
You know,
so
it's tough to say. People don't really talk about MLB scheduling in terms of teams, you know, getting it handed to them by the schedule makers and stuff like that, especially now in an era when everyone plays everyone home and away. Well, at least
players talk about it. Players talk about it when certain stretches, why.
I was just going to, and there's been a lot of why lately coming out of Bristol, and it, you look at the situation the Reds have been put in, it feels like there's some inequities in the Reds' schedule.
Well, so everybody has some of these, right? Like a year ago, it was the opposite. They got, I think, all of their West Coast trips done by June.
And I remember, it's a math game. You can't do that with everyone.
Right. So I remember talking, well, but it buried them. It buried them because they had an awful May and they never climbed out of that hole. And I remember talking to Jonathan India right about that time when they were struggling. You know, they weren't scoring, and just kind of like this year, that's their Achilles heel is a feast and famine lineup that's on balance below average in the league. But he was saying, well, the good news is we get all these out of the way now, and our schedules, our travel's not as tough later, because this does take a lot out of you. Well, now it's just the opposite. You know, they've kind of hung in there. They put themselves in position, and now they got the teeth of their road schedule coming up in two.
Yeah.
And not just West Coast trips. Their last two road trips of the season are three-city trips. Five of those cities are out west with one turnaround, with one Sacramento-St. Louis turnaround, which, you know, to be fair, it isn't much more difficult when you're flying charter than any other West Coast to St. Louis. But it is
not,
for the writers on the trip.
Not easy for you, No one cares about journalist problems. No.
Try to get out of West freaking Sacramento and get to St. Louis for a game the next day.
Let's talk about Kyle Schwarber, though.
Yes, sir. Give me one reason why he wouldn't elevate this team.
Oh, your point is well taken. He's
monster masher, left-handed.
He's going to hit in excess of 50 home runs this season.
He's got what, 42 now?
He's leading the NL. He's seems like the big dumper is going to maybe run away with the MLB home run crown.
This guy's already a home run champ, by the way. His career high is 46.
So 97 RBI. 110 hits. He's batting .250.
Look at the walks in the on base.
Yeah, 78 walks this year. I mean, he is
coming into the series. And you know what? Into the series, his on base would have led the Cubs.
There have been times during his Phillies tenure, which is he's in the last of a 4-year deal. He hit .218 in 2022. Average really dipped in 23, even though he was still bringing the power.
This guy never hit for average,
but.
It's all about on base for him.
He's got 2 years now running. He's up around .250.
Look at his OPS every year.
I don't want to waste time because we have.
Well,
you don't
bring this guy anywhere because he hits for
average.
His
OPS this year is .951,
right?
Which is wild.
And so what he does is he gets on base because he walks a ton, and he hits for a ton of power. And so he's always got a slugging 500-ish, sometimes well over that. This year, well over that.
Yeah.
And an on base, it's I think his career on base
45 slugging this year, but
I think his on base career is .350, .360, which gets it done.
Yeah. So no, look, and he's a hometown guy. He
still lives in Middletown. He still keeps a home in Middletown.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I mean, it would just
fit. His dad threw out the first pitch Tuesday.
That's cool.
That's very cool.
That's very cool. You were on scene. I was not. It's just going to come down to that thing where the Reds might not be able to match up with other teams that are interested.
Well, here's why I think the Reds can if they want to. Here's why I think it might work even for their bean counting if they want to stretch. And
it would be a big stretch.
He's going to be 33 in March. Now, you might say, well, why in the hell would we give a multi-year deal to a guy that's going to be in his mid-late 30s throughout that contract?
Yeah.
And the reason is because this guy doesn't, he takes care of himself.
He does. He's in great shape.
He's in great shape. He doesn't play a position. And you might say, well, why would we do that? Well, because he's an elite, elite left-handed bat that has always made his teams better. This guy has never had a losing season. He's never finished on a team with a losing record in his career. He's been to the playoffs in all but one season, and that team was in the race down to the last two or three weeks of the year. He's been to two World Series, and he helped win one. And for people who don't remember this, in 2016, when the Cubs finally won the first World Series in more than a century, this guy missed all year because he had a devastating knee injury in the third game of the season.
And he was out in Arizona getting ready.
The whole year he was rehabbing that thing. And right at the end of the year, he got just enough medical clearance that they said, you know, we might be able to clear you to hit, but you can't play in the field. You can't really run. So that was before the DH in the National League. He DH all four games in Cleveland, that seven game series, and raked. And he was a difference maker. This guy, look what he did in the All-Star game. The first time they ever went to that stupid home run off or whatever the hell they called it, swing off, home run derby thing. He gets three swings and he puts them all over the fence because, and I'm here to tell you, after watching this guy for so many years, it's because those counted. Those counted in a win-or-loss situation. Yeah. That's what this guy does. Yeah. When it counts, you want him at the plate.
I mean, as someone, I think people understand my situation as your co-beat writer. This is my first year on the beat with you. And prior to that, I was covering soccer. I really had no expectation of course, you would want to cover MLB and you would want to cover an organization like the Reds and do it with a great guy like you. But I just... thank you. Cha-ching! you know, it just... You don't expect things like that to happen, just given where I was at in my career. So I was able to really indulge in my personal baseball fandom, which gives me a good perspective on what he has been to the Philadelphia Phillies. I just want to balance this conversation out because you know, people rip you because they think you're some kind of like diehard Cubs fan, which I think is absolute nonsense.
Nobody who's ever read my stuff in Chicago would ever say
that. So I'm curious as to why I haven't been flagged for being a Phillies fan yet. And I shouldn't open that can of worms. But anyway, that's where I was in life prior to, and real professionals like Gordon can put fandom aside if you believe it or not. And look, the guy has been the catalyst for these Phillies teams that have gone to the playoffs the last 3 years.
Really
the team that went to the World Series in 2022. He had a great World Series in 22. He had a better playoff run overall. He dominated the NLCS that year. It's to the point where if the Phillies weren't able to retain Kyle Schwarber, I think they would have to rethink and retool how that club works offensively because of what he does by himself. So much revolves around him. They would have to rethink a lot of what they do offensively.
If they don't bring him back, that's going to tell you everything you need to know about the changing dynamics in ownership there because they've spent a lot of money in recent years to win. They brought in Dave Dombrowski, who likes spending a lot of money to win, but he's done it.
Right.
He has a formula for success. It's worked everywhere he's gone, including Philadelphia. And I've talked to Dave Dombrowski over the years many times and oftentimes about Kyle Schwarber. He loves the guy. He knows what that guy means in the clubhouse competitively, the intangibles. He talks about that all the time. And I'm here to tell you, having seen it firsthand for a number of years with that guy as he came up, it's true. And, you know, some guys just have this way about them that you kind of trust who they are.
Yeah.
And you trust who they – like that they got your back and that they're all about – trying to win and make you better as well as make themselves better. He's one of those guys. And I can't, you know, it's hard to quantify it in words, but man, there's a handful of guys out there that you see, you watch even from our perspective and you see the difference.
Yeah.
And he's clearly that.
Yeah. So, and I think part of the reason you want to do this is because this team is in a solid, there's a good foundation has been put down by Terry Francona, Nick Kroll, Brad Metter. You've got this Hall of Fame manager who's doing good work.
He's
here.
He's got 2 years left on a guaranteed part of his deal.
Don't you just want to, I mean, of course they want to go for it. It's a go for it. You know, it just, at some point it makes.
At some point, maybe instead of getting Miguel Andujar because he can hit lefties and he gives you an option off the bench or a platoon option, go get the guy that's going to help you every single day and make everybody in that lineup better and do the kind of protection for Ellie, whether you, and maybe you bat him second, but where he's making the kind of an impact around Ellie De La Cruz that Ellie De La Cruz also gets a benefit out of this about getting a little closer to his ceiling because there's a lot of ceiling left there for him. And now maybe you wind up catching a season or two where you've got the best two seasons of Ellie De La Cruz with Kyle Schwarber in your
who doesn't
lineup.
Appear. Look, I know he's, next year is going to be his age 32 season.
33. He's 32
age
now.
Age 33. Thank you. He doesn't appear. He's going to slow down. It doesn't look like it's happening now.
No. No.
So I think you can bet on at least one great season of Kyle Schwarber.
I think you can.
If he's healthy.
I like but his chances look, of three or four.
Let's just talk.
And that's the other part that works. I didn't finish saying what works on this. He's not gonna command more than four guaranteed years. I can't imagine. I mean, if four or five teams get in a bidding war for him, it might go up to five, or somebody might want to make the AAV work. But the Dodgers have their Shohei, the Mets have their Soto.
Some of the other top moneyed teams in baseball aren't going to be in for this guy.
Now the Yankees might because of that short porch in right, but they've. How long's Giancarlo Stanton on their books?
Yeah.
Because I don't know that they have a DH spot they can just hand over to somebody.
I don't think so either.
So, you start talking about it, fewer and fewer teams.
Yeah, so people have been, you know, kind of dismissive here locally, which is strange. I would think they'd want to be excited about just the conversation of potentially adding a Kyle Schwarber-type player and being in the mix for him. I think there's more to this than just you and I bloviating, you know.
Without a doubt.
Kyle Schwarber tried to walk back. I heard on Sports Talk Radio from a couple different outlets that he gave you a shout out for asking him the question about what it would mean to him to play in Cincinnati.
It's not the first time I
you,
asked
him. Sure. You and he, it was cool to hear him talk about it because he obviously has some reverence for you. I really believe that. Clearly you do have a relationship, as you've said, dating back to the earliest days of his career.
When he got drafted.
Yeah. Kyle Schwarber, just to give people an idea, he may have sounded like he did downplay the Cincinnati aspect.
Hey, listen.
But I promise you, he's handled this walk here perfectly.
Yes.
He's played up his competition. He didn't let the contract negotiation with Philadelphia drag into the season. He's going to keep his options open. He's going to go hit the open market this offseason, I'm certain. And I think the Phillies are going to be the main contender to re-sign him, only because it might be cheaper for them in the aggregate to pay him and keep him rather than lose him and have to retool a bunch of
spots. Especially if they go to the World Series again.
But here's the thing, the nervous laughter and cheering, kind of the edgy cheering you heard at Great American Ballpark when he hit that home run earlier in the first game of the series, that was every Philadelphia Phillies fan half enjoying the home run and knowing that each time Schwarber hits a home run, his value is going up. And he's inching closer to a tight finish in the MVP race with Shohei Ohtani. And there is a point here where the Phillies, even an organization that has nine-figure earners up and down their roster, they will be out on Schwarber at a certain price point.
And they might already be there.
They might.
Just because of ownership, not because of Dombrowski. Dombrowski keeps talking around
it. But Dombrowski has been very, very measured about the whole conversation. And he's not going to throw himself at Kyle Schwarber at this point either. But... It's people are nervous in Philadelphia about whether or not they can hang on to.
They should be.
Of course they should be.
Now, here's let me pull back 10,000 feet for a minute and then kind of take us back to that conversation I had with Schwarber. I never said this was likely to happen. Reds ownership has to step up. Philly's ownership has to decide he's too costly. And then Schwarber has to decide Cincinnati's where he wants to go next.
Yeah.
And those are three very big ifs. When I went over and talked to Schwarber, he had just finished up telling somebody else how much he likes Philadelphia, that his kids go to school, his kids consider it home. Yeah. Even though he keeps a home here, he spends a lot of time in Philadelphia.
Of course.
Compared to how much time he spends in Middletown. So I put the question to him, and if anybody actually read my story, they would have seen the context. I put the question to him as, if you don't get something done with Philly, how does your hometown team sound as a strong second choice to you? And he went there because he's a good guy. But if you read the quotes, it wasn't, yeah, I want to go. And by the way, there was one outlet that overheard the conversation and put some stuff out there before I wrote about it. And they included a quote that was not in that context.
Yeah.
Where he said that would be awesome. That was not in reference to Cincinnati. That was in reference to the next question I asked him, which was about his former teammate, yeah, Javi Baez, yeah, making the All-Star game for the first time in however many years.
Yeah.
And he said, that's awesome. Well, that came right after he talked about Cincinnati, and somebody thought that was the same thing, and it wasn't. So I made it very clear, and if you actually go read my story, you'll get an accurate sense of, yes, where this stands.
Yes.
My whole premise is this is something the Reds should go after.
And I completely agree. It just checks so many boxes for what this team wants and needs.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, what we haven't talked about and we should talk about before we go.
Yeah.
Is there's a guy coming back that some people might have forgotten was on the team, and he played in the first game of the year.
Do you have an hour left to?
He was the starting pitcher he threw the first pitch of the season for the Reds.
Boy,
Hunter Green is back this week.
Still a Red, by the way.
Still a Red, and has a chance to make as many as 9 starts the rest of the way for a team that can desperately use any kind of lift it can get.
Yeah.
And in my mind, the pressure's on him in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Well, how do you feel about his return? From a mild groin strain that kept him out most of the last 3 months.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm glad that so much of the conversation was brought directly to Hunter, which is how it should have happened.
There's been a lot of whispers.
I'm glad that Hunter had a chance to answer for some of this stuff when he had a session with media members at Great American Ballpark this week. And look, this is a very loaded thing. It's the second year in a row that I think you correct me if I'm wrong. It's the second year in a row where an injury that you didn't think would take up as much of his season as it did sidelined him for a significant chunk.
Yeah. There's a feeling out there that's kind of circulating around the club. There's this sense that he needs to maybe feel close to 100% to feel like he can pitch at all. And again, this is very sensitive. Nobody can get in anybody's head on how they feel and what's injury and what's just soreness and that kind of thing. But veteran pitchers, veteran players will tell you all the time, they play with a laundry list of things that they just have to sort of get through because of the nature of the job.
And here's the thing. This Reds team, through grit and good managing, smart roster moves by Nick Kroll and Brad Metter, but mostly through the grit of the players in that clubhouse, and a lot of it's fallen on the pitchers. This Reds team has made something of themselves. They are in contention in mid-August.
Well, you know, grit. I don't know what grit is. I mean, they play hard. They've got just enough talent to be in a lot of games. They don't hit well enough. They're busting their ass defensively, even though they're not a bunch of gold glovers. So I guess that's grit.
I'll tell you what grit is.
They're pitching their ass off.
Well.
And they pitch their ass off without him, which says something about how good this team could be.
Yeah. And I will just tell you that my definition of grit is
John Wayne.
Scott Barlow.
No. That's true grit.
That is true grit. But my definition of grit is Scott Barlow has made 57 appearances out of the bullpen this year.
He pitched six out of seven games at one point.
Tony Santian has 60 appearances this year. You have guys playing through significant injury. Only Hunter Green knows if, you know, the nature of what he's been dealing with and how that's affected his ability to pitch.
Yeah.
And I'm just stating that, take that at face value. He knows.
And to be fair, injuries like a groin or a calf or, you know, leg injuries can sometimes create bad habits that then turn into arm
absolutely.
Injuries.
Absolutely. I mean, and look, there's a reason that Terry Francona and Derek Johnson have generally been deferential to Hunter Green throughout this saga.
Yeah. Well, I mean, partly they don't have a lot of choice.
Right. But they could have come back at some point and said, hey, we need you back. We think you should pitch right now.
I think they said that without, because you can't order him to.
No.
I think they said versions of that.
Okay. Well, good.
Because Tito said it, whatever it was, Tuesday. But he said, you know, we talked to him. You know, sometimes you, and he didn't get totally explicit on this. But he said, you talk to a guy sometimes and you say, you know, well, you can, if we can get 95% of you, we can use it.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes a guy, you don't know what a guy's dealing with. You can't get inside his head or in his body to know what he's got going. And so sometimes sometimes it's not there, right?
The fact of the matter is Hunter Green was an all-star in 2024.
Should have been an all-star this year. He was well on his way.
He would have been.
Well on
absolutely.
His way.
All the little memes and the graphics that MLB and other aggregator outlets put together and float out on social media next to the action shots and the headshots of, you know, Paul Skeens and Zach Wheeler was Hunter Green. He was in the conversation with those guys, you know.
He was in the conversation for Cy Young.
Absolutely.
Early August last year.
That's
about this time.
Yeah. So, look, at the very least, I think we can say the recurrence of injury issues are starting to affect how Reds fans perceive Hunter Green.
And not just the fans.
Well, but this stuff is out there.
Yeah.
And Hunter Green had a chance to answer for some of that. How would you characterize how his awareness, his self-awareness of all of this?
I think he knows what's being whispered out there.
Yeah.
I think, I think even though he says he maybe doesn't have to make amends, I think he kind of does. He at least has something to show, if not prove, to his teammates. Never mind the fans who are paying money to see this team try to get to the playoffs. So, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair expectation for a guy who's the highest paid pitcher on the mound in terms of full contract.
Yeah.
He's the one guy that's got a multi-year contract, $53 million deal. He's the guy that's supposed to be the ace. He's the opening day starter. He's pitched like the ace. He's got as much talent as anybody this side of Chase Burns on that staff.
I would argue he's not the ace now, though.
He's not the ace now.
Andrew Abbott is
Andrew
the ace.
Abbott's the ace now because Andrew Abbott's pitched and pitched well. If you don't pitch, you can't be the ace.
And one of the things that I've found to be true, and this would be standard issue for you, very basic baseball stuff, but I noticed it on my first year in the beat. The most competitive, the most fiercely competitive and impressive pitchers on this staff, for me, your Nick Martinez's, your Nick Lodolo's, Abbott's, these are all guys that pride themselves on what some people will say is the best ability, which is
availability.
And Hunter just simply hasn't been available.
No, and so this is where these last nine starts are as important as any nine starts in his career, in my mind.
Yeah.
I think they will set the tone and tell the story of what comes next for him as a Red, one way or the other.
Yeah, I agree.
Or maybe not as a Red. I mean, these are all things that I think could wind up being in play depending on how things go down a stretch. And that's not about whether they make the playoffs or not, but it's about how he responds to his return and what he's able to do for this team with this team,
yeah,
with those teammates.
Yeah. Well, I just want to bring your attention to something in our environment here in the recording studio. Our big boss is checking around to make sure that he can get in the studio. So.
Well, he can't because we've got a very important podcast. Did we not say this is the greatest podcast, the greatest baseball? Actually, it's the greatest podcast.
He does know that. Well, whoa, watch it, because he's got his own podcast.
Oh, that's right, because he wants to get in here to do a podcast.
So, second greatest podcast at the Inquirer.
It's one of
the... But the greatest Reds podcast...
I'm not taking second place. Hey, maybe we should do a poll on that.
It's the two best.
It's the two best podcasts in the world, but
I think Burl's podcast is the best. And he does do a great job.
I know they do a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't want to lock horns there, but I just wanted to make you aware of the fact that he seems to be eager to get in the studio here. But, look, Hunter's going to get a marquee opportunity to show himself. As we record this, he will be preparing for an outing against
Christopher Sanchez,
one of the Philadelphia Phillies' leading Cy Young candidates.
I think he might be their best pitcher so far this year.
No, you read me the stats the other night. Christopher Sanchez actually probably, I don't think either of these guys is going to win the Cy, but Christopher Sanchez is an all-star. He was a snub this year, but the Phillies actually paid out his all-star bonus.
I saw that. Yeah,
which
was kind of pretty
classy.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. Yeah, but look, all of this is to say, it's the rubber match of a big series in this big stretch. If Hunter Green can play some kind of role in the Phillies in the Reds winning this game and taking two or three out of the Phillies at this stage in the season, boy, that'd be a hell of a way to announce your return in that Reds clubhouse.
Yeah, I think that'd be a nice first step.
I think some people would maybe think differently on burying some of their qualms if he goes out and shoves against this Phillies lineup.
But then he's got to come back and do it again, and he's got to stay in there. And, I hope the guy does it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been really good to deal with. He's pleasant guy.
I've had some wonderful conversations with the dude. I don't think you and I don't have an axe to grind with the guy.
None of this is personal.
I've had some incredible conversations with him on the subject.
Personally, it's all good.
Yeah. But we do have to look at this in our job with a critical,
it's about winning,
with
man.
An analytic eye and,
just win, baby.
Yeah.
That's what it's about right now. Yeah. Hey, we should wrap it up because at some point the boss does want to get in here. Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, for Pat, for our great producer Phil Didion. That's a wrap for this edition of the Big Pod Machine. And we'll have some pretty good stuff next week to talk about, without a doubt. So keep tuning in and hit the what do you call that thing on the computer? Like the download or
like and subscribe.
Like
can
and
we do that?
There you
are
go.
We,
go
are
do
we on
that.
YouTube?
Go like us and subscribe and all that other computer stuff.
Subscribe to the Inquirer would be great.
Something else? You download or upload or some damn thing.
Well, you can find this podcast where you find all your other major podcasts. That's where I listen to it.
There you go.
On the Apple podcast app. We're there. So check it out. And go to Cincinnati.com because this is a huge week for the Reds, and we will be covering it all the way through.
Wall to wall.
Yep.
All right. With that, thanks for listening. Next week, talk to you then.